Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Mark Drugs, who specialise in the custom compounding of medications, assuring that the client gets the proper prescriptions for their unique needs and conditions. They work with practitioners, integrating knowledge and treatment of experts to create comprehensive health plans. Visit markdrugs.com or call Roselle 630-529-3400 or Deerfield 847-419-9898. Today my guest is Dr. Neil Mehta from New York. He's a pain specialist and all the different things he's done is absolutely amazing. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Mehta.
Thank you, Linda, for having me. This is a real pleasure.
So could you tell our listeners, you know, what experience you've gained so far in the pain field?
Well, I think it'd be helpful to have a little bit of background about me and understand why I've chosen this line of work. Mm-hmm. I am an anesthesiologist by training and have gone on to do fellowship training in pain management. During my time in medical school, I was fascinated by anesthesiology and orthopedics and had a real hard time trying to decide how I'd go forward in my career. I ended up choosing anesthesiology for a number of reasons. And during my training in anesthesiology, I had the fortune of working in a great pain management center here at Weill Cornell and learned a lot about suffering of patients and sort of the limited options that we had. Fortunately, I also had some time in the obstetric ward to treat people that were in labor and suffering from pain and saw how we had great options for them. So I saw a lot of potential and so I ended up choosing to do pain management because I thought it gave me an aspect of treating a broader range of patients rather than just women in labor. And so when I came out, I still was amazed at that other than some nerve blocks and some various medications that had been around for years, such as gabapentin and Lyrica and traditional opioids, there really wasn't any other novel ways to treat pain. And so I was always sort of questing and thirsty for new and better ways that were safer and less side effects, and really trying to minimize opioids even before this opioid crisis existed. And so the opportunity to do that has really been a lifelong goal and continues to drive how I work and research here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure the ladies who were in labor really appreciated your help. Having been there myself, it is called labor for a reason, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was the gratification that you got almost instantaneously that was so rewarding. And I do miss that aspect. But you know, now I get to treat both sexes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, just as a question I'd like to ask, it's many years ago since I had my children, and epidurals were the main thing for pain in those days, and pethidine and gas and air. I think that was your only options. What options are there now? Has it progressed over that period of time?
Certainly. So epidurals still remain the mainstay of traditional labor, but the cocktail used in those epidurals has evolved. So the idea of being numb from the waist down really has been eliminated, and now you have what we call walking epidurals, where patients can actually ambulate during their time, you know, before they're in active labor and pushing. We are trying to minimize the amount of opioid that we use as well, doing things like combined spinal epidurals that allow sort of more instantaneous pain relief if someone has progressed a little bit further in labor, and then have an epidural to back it up. And then the most headway has been done in C-sections, where the surgical techniques have really sort of stayed the same, but the anesthetic techniques have improved. So using less opioids, doing things like transverse abdominis, plane blocks, nerve blocks of the abdominal area muscles, and also realizing just how much opioid is needed and using multimodal therapy, that you can almost eliminate the amount of opioid. So some of my colleagues have done tremendous work where they have been able to actually cut down on the number of days that someone has to stay in the hospital just for pain. And that has made a real improvement both for quality and cost of healthcare related to having a baby.
Wow, that is amazing. So now you treat both sexes. Do you treat children as well, or are you just an adult physician?
So I do treat children. I generally start at around age 6, although the mainstay of my care is adult. Mm-hmm. And just recently, I have the fortune of recruiting a great colleague who actually did training with me, but then was working elsewhere. And her name is Dr. Veronica Carullo, and she's a anesthesiologist and a specialist in pediatric pain. So she is now our new director of pediatric pain management at Cornell. Mm-hmm. And a really unique opportunity, the only one of its kind in New York City, to have multimodal pain management therapy for pediatrics, both on an inpatient and outpatient basis.
Wow. I myself have MS, and I used to have very bad pins and needles and very painful numbness. And people used to say about pain, and no, I haven't got pain, but I've just got this really bad pins and needles. And then one day somebody said, well, isn't that painful? Well, yes, but I wasn't classing it as pain per se, like toothache is pain, you know, pins and needles is pins and needles. But anyway, what kind of pain do you treat? I mean, many autoimmune diseases have pain in different forms. You know, it can be a dermatological pain, it can be a fibromyalgia type pain or an MS pain, or these pins and needles. You know, what do people present to you? What kind of pain?
Well, working in an academic medical center, essentially a tertiary care center, we see the full spectrum of pain. Mm-hmm. So the majority of my cases are going to be spine and musculoskeletal related conditions, things like nerve related pains due to disc herniations or sciatica in lay term, or spinal stenosis or osteoarthritis of the joints, whether it be spinal joints or hips and knees and ankles. But also we treat headaches, we treat neuropathic conditions like shingles and trigeminal neuralgia, post-herpetic neuralgia. We treat post-surgical pain conditions like post-laminectomy syndrome, you know, failed surgeries for spine that continue to have neuropathic pain, post-thoracotomy or post-breast mastectomy surgeries that lead to chronic pain. And then things like you've mentioned, like MS and fibromyalgia. And so really a potpourri of conditions. Mm-hmm. And the symptoms range. The symptoms would be as simple as an ache, as you've mentioned, could be paresthesias or pins and needles. It could be burning electrical type pains. And often we use the description of the pain from the patient to help us focus on what is the underlying diagnosis and what's the underlying treatment for this particular condition. It helps us tease out just how much is coming from one condition versus another. Because as you know, you could have a diagnosis of MS, but also have a disc herniation.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to differentiate the two causes and how you would treat them may differ quite significantly. And then, you know, finally, we do a lot of cancer-related pain as well, whether it is active cancer and things like tumor compression of a nerve or tumor burden, metastatic disease to bone, end-of-life care, but also the survivors that have had trouble with treatment-related causes of pain, such as post-chemotherapy or post-radiation-related neuropathies or post-surgical-related pains, and trying to help them regain their life.
Mm-hmm.
What's been a new phenomenon is we have always been very aggressive with opioids in the cancer population because we feel they're suffering and may have little time left. But now we've been able to successfully treat so many patients in modern-day medicine that they survive but now have potential for opioid addiction.
Mm.
And how do we help those patients come down off of medication and regain their functional lives again?
Mm.
So the question being, how do we classify pain? It's often in a real story that's developing as the patient is talking to us, as we examine them, as we gather information and interpret results, and then do a little bit of systematic trial and error of treatment. And often this is a shared decision, you know, medical process with the patient, because some may have thoughts on how they want to proceed and just how aggressively or what types of treatment they'd be open to. Some may only want to do things like acupuncture and physical therapy, which we offer. And some may say, I've been living with this for a long time. I want to be as aggressive as possible to treat this as quickly as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And that may require things like implantable devices or other types of treatments.
Do you also treat phantom limb pain?
Very much so. Phantom limb pain, obviously in post-trauma related conditions, or even amputations from diabetic neuropathies or poor vascular conditions. Certainly, we have seen our fair share of those patients.
Mm-hmm. And when did you first hear about LDN? Was that during your training?
It actually was after my training. I met some colleagues that I know have presented at the LDN conference, such as Dr. Pradeep Chopra and Dr. Samyadev Dada. And they're great colleagues and have been visionaries in pain management. And I know that they've been using LDN for a long time in complex regional pain syndrome. And as I started to research the drug more and more, I realized how little was known in the pain community. And then shortly afterwards, we started to see some good papers coming out, such as the work done by Sean Mackey out in Stanford for fibromyalgia. And then also meeting some doctors, older physicians that knew about combination LDN and opioid therapy to try to prevent addiction and increase the strength of the medication. So learning a little bit from history about the drug.
Mm-hmm.
So as I've read more and more and discovered more about it, my trainees have learned and have enthusiastically tried to understand what it is and have really adopted it and use it in their practices, often differentiating themselves from a lot of other physicians and seeing how it positions themselves to be more comprehensive in their treatment.
So how long have you been prescribing it yourself?
I have probably been prescribing about 5 years now, maybe a little bit over that. And the rate of usage has gone up significantly. And what I am most fascinated now is the wide variety of dosing that is being utilized. And I think most recently, a lot of people who have adopted the use of LDN have sort of based it on the papers that have come out of Stanford using a range of 1 milligram to 4.5 milligrams. But we realized that that's not a one-size-fits-all. And ultra-low dose prescribing in the microgram strength is also something I've been increasing usage of. The frequency of usage is also something I'm fascinated by, whether to use once a day or all the way up to four times a day. And so the trouble is trying to understand this and research this is where we are in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say the patient success rates have been with using LDN?
So it's actually one of the drugs that has been a home run. I would say if I had to do a head-to-head comparison against something like gabapentin for neuropathic pain, my anecdotal experience has been that it's more successful than those type of drugs for a number of reasons. Number one, its overall efficacy has been good. So in terms of reduction of pain. But the biggest thing is compliance. So how easy is it for a patient to follow directions and use it? And also interaction and side effects is almost minimal. So some patients may describe some minimal side effects, but they tolerate it and go on with it. But gabapentin and Lyrica are more challenging. The side effects such as weight gain and sedation and dizziness are really challenging for them. And often it's frustrating for everybody because we'll try those drugs and a patient comes back a week later or 2 weeks later and saying, I took one dose and didn't tolerate it and I stopped it altogether. So in our challenge in those treatments is that we just don't have anything equivalent until we discovered LDN. And now we almost offer it to every type of neuropathic condition. Mm-hmm. And the drug is cheap. We are fortunate that the compounding pharmacies that we work with have been able to offer it at a very palatable price compared to some of the other compounding drugs that we may use.
Mm-hmm. And have you used it in phantom pain?
So as I mentioned, I've used it broadly in neuropathic pains.
Mm-hmm.
So phantom limb is something I have used it in, although I will say that my population of phantom limb pain is much smaller than, say, my trigeminal neuralgia or fibromyalgia or other neuropathic conditions. We've also been using it a lot in patients that have myofascial pain that have become more of a centralized or hypersensitized type condition. So when they have central sensitization of their muscle pain, I find LDN very effective in trying to reduce that and then find a more core origin of their myofascial pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was only asking about the phantom limb pain is because we have many members that are military who've lost limbs.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And, you know, it is worth a try, isn't it? You know, you've got to find someone who will prescribe it, but it's definitely worth a try.
Absolutely. I see very little downside to it. I think often the patients, once they hear about it and talk about how we plan to use it, what's the potential for benefit and the minimal side effects, we have a very good success rate of having patients try it and be pleased with it. If you just do research on naltrexone alone on Google, sometimes it's a little scary the types of things that come up associated with naltrexone. And so I take the time to counsel patients on why we are using it and how does it differ from the other purposes of naltrexone itself. And that's very reassuring for patients.
Mm-hmm.
Phantom limb pain, I think, is one of those things that it's almost a no-brainer to use in these conditions, along with other multimodal therapies, including mirror therapy, physical therapy, and then refractory conditions to consider things like ketamine and spinal cord stimulation or peripheral nerve stimulation. So, you know, there's a wide variety of treatments, but LDN should be one of the mainstays.
Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised. I mean, years ago, I mean, we've been going 15 years now, but it was mainly to help autoimmune conditions. So rheumatoid arthritis, but we were saying it probably won't do anything for osteoarthritis. But that's not the case. It does work for osteoarthritis as well, which is quite amazing. And even, unfortunately, many years ago, and a lot of our members are sort of 70s, 80s, where they have been having very high doses of steroids throughout their years, since they were like 20, 30, and it's caused the crumbling of the spine. So nerves are getting trapped. And LDN seems to be working really well in those cases as well, but it sounds absolutely horrendous. I would hate that to happen to me. But I'd like to think steroids aren't as widely used now as they were, you know, 40 years ago. I mean, would you say that's the case, that we're doing something different than high doses of steroids over a long period?
We certainly have an appreciation for the risk of high steroid use. So we know now what doses we can use at a time and how often those patients can get it. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, steroid is still a mainstay treatment for various conditions like osteoarthritis, especially in the hands of an interventional specialist. We still believe in the continuum of care, such as things like physical therapy, but also, you know, the use of acupuncture, turmeric, NSAIDs when appropriate, steroids if you're going to give maybe localized steroid, and now a lot of things like platelet-rich plasma and stem cell are starting in its mm-hmm. emergence of data. But you're right that LDN does work, and you know, while it may not have 100% cure rate, it can certainly lessen the burden of osteoarthritis enough for people to be able to do more in their physical therapy and be more active and lose weight and all the other things that come in a positive cycle to help them overall improve their functional ability and their quality of life.
And how have you found using the ultra low dose alongside of opioids to make them more effective to help patients withdraw from their opioids?
So this is a healthy debate I have with a colleague of mine. Mm-hmm. He starts at 100 micrograms and will consider ramping that up over time to 4 times a day and then slowly get up into potentially a milligram dose. And I tend to start the opposite. I may start at 1 milligram and decide whether I need to go up or down based on the symptoms that they're experiencing. The challenge that we have is there are patients that don't respond in the milligram dose, but do respond in the microgram dose, even with an absence of side effects. And this is where I think working with your organization and working with David on research in this to really pinpoint how do we best identify dosing for patients is going to be fascinating. Mm-hmm. But to answer the question about how have I found it, it has really helped patients with tolerance and actually prevention of tolerance. So we use it quite frequently in traditional opioid mu receptor type drugs. But I also use it synergistically for neuropathic pain conditions when I use things like tramadol or buprenorphine products or tapentadol, where it also has, you know, some effect as well. So my belief is that it's worth a chance to see. We start extremely low. We are able to get one of our compounding pharmacies to start at 100 micrograms in a tablet form, which a patient can split in half and take 50 micrograms at a time. So, you know, we're seeing some really interesting clinical data, and now we just are trying to put this together and see if we can publish our work on it.
Mm. I mean, if you are a drug addict through no fault of your own because they are prescription drugs, but it still makes you addicted to these opioids. And coming off, you've got to be so careful that you don't go into withdrawal. So if something like ultra low dose can be used to help wean people off without those awful withdrawal symptoms, in my book, that's got to be amazing.
Absolutely. I mean, if we can eliminate the usage or even cut down the doses to be in a safer range, I think it helps everyone, including the patients that are taking these medications, the prescribers who are trying to handle risk of these medications, the families that may be in the same households where these medications are being stored and trying to avoid harm of getting these medications in the wrong hands. So these are all potential benefits of downstream effects of LDN.
Mm-hmm. And what's the long-term effect to the body if you take high doses of opioids?
Well, there's a number of things. So number one, to the patient itself that's taking the opioids, there's a very high likelihood of tolerance. Mm-hmm. And that's a very challenging and frustrating problem for everybody in that the same dose of medication has a diminished effect in terms of pain relief. So the natural thought would be to increase the dose, but eventually that, even without in the absence of addiction and addiction type behaviors, the same patient taking a higher dose has a much higher likelihood of achieving side effects that could make it unbearable to continue on that therapy. And what side effects am I referring to? Those are things like severe constipation at a more sort of moderate problem, to all the way to being impaired, not being able to function at work, missing days at work, or being unproductive during their time. Mood irritation and irritability to the point that they become very difficult to be around family and loved ones, to the point of not being able to drive to work or drive in a car anymore because they're so impaired, or that they sleep more, may gain weight as they sleep more, become less active. So overall, their quality of life may go down, even though they have the original intention of trying to improve their pain with a higher dose. And then you have the risk of addiction, and that is potential for now using medication in inappropriate ways, combining it with things like alcohol and so forth. And then finally, what is the risk of all this medication sitting in the home? So could a teenager in the household get into it and use it in a recreational way and cause harm and die? Could it get in the hands of a young child? Could it get stolen and get into a drug addict's possession? So all of these things are harm that if we can eliminate or reduce the amount of medication in circulation, there are so many downstream effects in addition to the ones that the patient would benefit from.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. Well, we've just about run out of time. Can patients refer themselves to see you, or do they have to be referred by their own doctor? How do patients get to see you?
So for LDN, I think recently you've been kind enough to share some of our practice information. Mm-hmm. And just recently I've had a couple of patients that actually have no pain related things, but wanted to talk about LDN usage, and I've been happy to see them. So patients are able to make an appointment if they are not coming for a particularly pain condition, then I ask them to specify with our schedulers that they're here to discuss LDN, and I'm happy to meet with them. Mm-hmm. But for painful conditions, I have a team of 8 other doctors that have experience with LDN, and some of them have been prescribing it for just as long as I have. So, we welcome these patients to come see us. If they're motivated to want to try to improve their life without the use of opioids. We really welcome them if they're trying to reduce the amount that they take, and hopefully they understand that LDN is a great drug, but that there's a multitude of options that we want to present to them. And that's where we think our multidisciplinary practice will really help.
Mm-hmm. And what number should they call you on?
So our office number is 646-962-7246. We are located in Manhattan. We will also offer video visits for follow-up visits. We're not allowed to do it for the initial ones, but if they are able to make the journey to see us even from far away one time, then we can potentially continue care for them virtually. We have had patients come from other countries, and we've also from, I'm up to 48 states of the 50 in the United States that have come to see me.
Wow. Well, there we are. Well, it's been amazing talking to you today, and we'll have you back another time.
Linda, thank you very much for the opportunity. It's really, really been a great collaboration that we have started on, and I hope to continue to help everybody through our work together.
Thank you.
This show is sponsored by Mark Drugs, who specialize in the custom compounding of medications, assuring that the client gets the proper prescriptions for their unique needs and conditions. They work with practitioners, integrating knowledge and treatment of experts to create comprehensive health plans. Visit markdrugs.com or call Roselle 630-529-3400 or Deerfield 847-419-9898. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.